The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn.
We want to welcome our first guest now, Karsten Breske, senior economist at IMF Belgium, to the show.
Hi there.
Karsten, Spain has been on everybody's minds this week, and of course we're headed towards the IMF World Bank meetings at the weekend. I just want to draw your attention to an FT article today, Robert Zoellick, head of the World Bank, still outgoing head, saying that the preoccupation is with this firewall and that this is missing the point. Would you agree with him?
To some extent, I think the firewall is very important. But of course, what he's hinting at is that the problem, the real problem, especially in Spain, is growth, or better, the lack of growth. So Europe has to do something about growth. The only question is whether actually they can improve the growth prospects of Spain. Because remember, Spain is in the middle of a bursting real estate bubble, and I'm afraid that we will first see really one or two more years of correction in the real estate market in Spain before we can see any improvement in the economy.
Karsten, given the fact that unemployment's at 23%, unemployment among those 18 to 24 is at 50.5%, how are austerity policies anywhere near appropriate given the fundamental economic condition of the economy of Spain?
Of course, and the thing is, if you start, depends on where you cut expenditures. Of course, here you should not cut expenditures on social benefits, on unemployment benefits. But usually, I think European administrations do always have some kind of slack which they can cut on. And the next thing is, if you do austerity, try to give incentives actually for the business environment to stimulate investment, not public investment, but private investment.
You know, Spain is tethered to the euro. That they can't externally adjust the way a normal country might under the same conditions. Therefore, they're going to have to experience what's called internal devaluation. They have to take real wage haircuts. I just don't quite get how you're going to get growth at a time when wage haircuts are going to be the reality for the next several years.
I fully agree. The only question is whether external help could really do the trick. And that's a thing. If you look at an economy which has a domestic bubble which bursts, so I think this idea of that more stimulus from countries like Germany could help the Spanish economy is not really the reality, because there hardly is any Spanish export sector. So even if the Germans spend more, if they consume more, it won't be Spanish product, but it's rather made in China or made in the U.S.
Okay, since you brought up Germany, let's go there. In preparation for the show, I did a little experiment. I rebased unit labor costs across the European Union to 2005, and what I found was, starting about a year and a half ago, the Germans have taken the largest haircut in terms of wages. They're down 4%. How can the countries of Europe, especially the sovereign southern countries, expect Germans to contribute to what's effectively a bailout of their country at a time when German workers are going to have to take wage haircuts themselves?
Exactly, but you're putting the finger on where it hurts in the Eurozone. So if we ever were to see a rebalancing of the Eurozone, we would need to see higher wages in Germany. Higher wages in Germany would immediately let the alarm bells in the European Central Bank and the Bundesbank ring. And, of course, I don't see many German companies kind of saying that, listen, we are in an international international market, so why should we see our wages increasing just for the sake of the Spanish if we at the same time lose market shares against emerging countries? So this is where this idea of rebalancing the Eurozone is not really, I think, putting forward a real solution.
Well, Karsten, as you mentioned, exports are not that strong from Spain. What does the Spanish economy need to do in order to boost the export part of the economy?
This would be a painful, let's say, reshuffling from labor, at the same time cutting wages and shuffling labor from the construction sector, which is extremely huge in Spain, much bigger in terms of GDP than in all other Eurozone countries. So they would need to shift labor from the construction sector to the tradable sector. So to start to find go into the automobile industry. There is a bit in Spain. Try to be innovative. try to come up with R&D. Maybe do something on sun or solar energy. So, but this is a process. Shifting labor is not be done from one day to the other, but will require, I think, really an adjustment process of a couple of years.
There's political support and there's also popular support. Where are we on that in the likes of Spain, where the central government doesn't have that much control over the regions?
Yeah, I think the best performing country there is Italy, and so there things look or seem to be going rather well. If you look at Spain, obviously, so that now we have a real clash between the federal government and the regional government. In terms of popular support, I think this is still rather fine in Spain, because we had a couple of demonstrations and we had a couple of strikes, but I think the public stands behind the reforms. The big thing, of course, is politicians need to get their act together.
You know, you mentioned Germany in the last segment, and I'm wondering, with the presidential first round of the presidential election in France coming up, why François Hollande hasn't perhaps called out both the ECB and Frau Merkel, given the need to rebalance what's going on in Europe?
To be honest, I think this is more a bit of ballyhooing in the French domestic campaign than really a serious threat or ideas. I've heard so many French politicians over the last 10, maybe 20 years trying to attack the independence of the ECB, trying to bash a bit the Germans. I think whether it's going to be Hollande or whether it's going to be Sarkozy at the end of the race for the presidential election, we will not see a big change, at least not in terms of the French position and in Europe.
What about Greece, Karsten? We've got elections coming up on May 6th in Greece, and it has been pretty tenuous, the situation there. Are we going to see a change over to the opposite party? And in that situation, do some of the reforms get revoked?
I think that indeed that Greece is very threatening, because if you look at, I think the parties that signed the bailout package and the agreement for more reforms in Greece right now only make up for 30% according to the opinion polls. So there is a high chance that the opposition wins. That parties that didn't sign the bailout package, the program with the IMF, the ECB, and Europe will govern the country. And then, yes, there is a risk that part of the program are changed. It would obviously not be for the better for the Greek, because, to be honest, I think if whatever Greek government we're going to get, if they start to change the conditions of the bailout package, it will not amuse their European friends.
You know, Karsten, I know it's difficult in the midst of a crisis, and this is a deep crisis, but if you take a step back and look out, say, 5 to 7 years, will the European Union have far more flexible pricing arrangements, wage arrangements, a reduction in nominal wage rigidity, so it looks more like the UK and the US? Or will things relatively be the same?
I think we will move much more closer to the UK and the US. I think that the entire social economic model of Europe will be under enormous pressure. It's not only about the crisis, it's also about aging. So I think we will see a totally new role of the public sector. The labor market will have to be more flexible. The big thing, and that's even not an economic thing, is whether Europeans will start to speak the same language. Because if you look at labor mobility in the UK or in the US, speaking or sharing the same language is the big thing. And as long as we do not share the same language in Europe, labor mobility will only be something for the highest educated people and the lowest educated people, but not for the big middle class.
Well, you know, the acid test for this transformation that looks likely to occur, and I think indeed has to occur, is what's going on in Italy. Is there the collective political will and economic will to alter the two-track labor system that basically employs the old at the expense of the young in the ancient Italian state?
I think what we're seeing, let's say, good steps taken to the right direction. As always in Europe, things do not go that fast as we would like them to be. But I think, to be honest, right now I'm very satisfied with what we do see from Italy. The Monti government is taking the right steps, and I'm positive that we will be getting there. It's going to be a rough way.
You know, Karsten, that was a very sobering thing that you said a few minutes ago about how the language needs to be common among the different countries, because I couldn't ever imagine a time where all of the individual countries in Europe would make their domestic languages a secondary language to, say, English or French or German. And in that case, if that can't be imagined, does that mean that a federation is just a fantasy?
To be honest, I would not be that pessimistic, especially on the language, because we've seen that once Europe is cornered, once the pressure is high enough, when there is a crisis, we've seen Europe so often to finally take the step. But of course, it's about national cultures, it's about national pride, it's about national history. So therefore, we will never see a common first language, but I'm positive that we're going to see at least a common second language all over the European countries.
Is inflation becoming a problem in Europe, Karsten, and in the UK?
I think it's right now probably the least problem to worry about. A bit more of inflation would definitely not do any harm to Europe or the UK. I think the only worrying thing right now is with this kind of inflation, it's an energy-driven inflation, so which means headline inflation goes up, but at the same time, of course, it is choking off consumer spending. It might harm industrial production. So right now, I think the biggest threat from inflation is that it, in a way, it is deflationary.
Karsten Breske of ING in Belgium, thank you so much. You senior economist there at ING.
You can listen to The Hayes Advantage weekdays at noon Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM satellite radio channel 113. Copyright 2012 Bloomberg LP.